This is Access Radio Chicago, AM 750 WNDZ, Portage, Indiana, Chicago.
The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Bill Berger, Rory Spears, and Len Zien, Chicago's favorite foursome.
Well, good morning. It's our it's our regular 10 o'clock tee time. We're going to bring you the world of golf from a Chicago area perspective. The show's Golfers on Golf. And, hey, thanks a lot for joining us today. As you just heard, our team here is myself, Ed Stevenson, PGA professional with the Forest Preserve District of DuPage County, alongside PGA Life member Bill Berger, Chicago area sports journalist Rory Spears, and Illinois Golf Hall of Famer Len Zien joins us on the line as well. And, guys, another beautiful summer day for golf here in Chicago. For the three of us that are here in Chicago, we know we've got Len dialed in remotely, but a lot of folks now know the name Wyndham Clark, Rory, that maybe didn't know that name before. It was a pretty exciting U.S. Open. I think a lot of discussion about L.A. Country Club and some different opinions. There were some tour players that were candid with their opinions about it, and I actually know some industry folks and architects that absolutely loved it. So your thoughts, Rory?
Yeah, it was an interesting open week, and you know what? We didn't really know what to expect when we saw not one but two 62s the first day, and you know, a couple other players potentially at 6 or 7 under par. Everybody's going, this isn't the U.S. Open, and it's too easy, and you know, a lot of things, but I had my suspicions that we would still see some movement going lower, but not like 5 or 6 under par every day. I didn't see anybody getting to 22 under at the U.S. Open and winning the tournament. And obviously, in the end, that's not what happened. So, you know, a good week and in some ways, some interesting things. A lot of things have been written and said since. Complaints from players about the late tee times, especially on the weekend for TV. Slight rating bump for NBC over recent U.S. Opens, but at the same time, tons of complaints about too many commercials and also too many complaints about a lot of the commentary, Paul Azinger taking a pasting for some things he said on Sunday. And Wyndham Clark, you know, a good guy. And we all know the story about his mom passing away from breast cancer. I actually first met him at Rich Harvest Farms during the 2017 NCAA championship. And they were doing their press conference out in the media center at Rich Harvest, and an email popped during their press conference that said he had just received an exemption to the John Deere Classic. So
one of our favorites.
Yep. And so I actually chased him down after they left the media center to interview him about that exemption, and didn't realize that he hadn't gone through all of his phone messages yet and didn't know. So was fortunate enough to
broke news, Rory, once again.
To break the news to him that he was going to be coming back about an hour and a half down the road from Rich Harvest Farms in about a month to play at John Deere. So we had a nice chat that day, and always seems like a really good guy.
Well, a good winner, and I know you know one of the storylines. I loved seeing golf in primetime TV. It was actually pretty nice to be able to you know. Be there on the couch in the evening time and dialed in and still be able to get through, you know, these busy days that we've all got going in the golf business right now. And, you know, a guy who was busy and the leader going into the final round was really one of these storylines. Billy, I know you've been around players who maybe had lost their edge or taken a bit of a seemed to drop off the precipice before. That seemed to be Ricky Fowler, who had been dropping in the world rankings. But although he ended up in a tie for fifth, Ricky Fowler ended up contending. And, Bill, it's got to be pretty hard for guys to work their way back when they're no longer maybe playing as well as they had been previously. Everyone loves a good comeback story.
Yeah, you know, Fowler's been, you know, you know, he's really been playing good this year. And, you know, the fifth place finish or fourth, whatever he was, really wasn't that bad. And then he wasn't playing, you know, an empty chair. This fella, what, he played like 65, 70 tour tournaments. So
right.
he you know.
Didn't come from nowhere.
He didn't come from nowhere. He's a real journeyman. So, you know, it wasn't a shame that he would lose to a guy like that or get beat by a guy like that.
Field full of stars, Billy.
That was big time competition there, you know. So
agreed. And Len, it was on especially late for you. I imagine you were watching from the East Coast time zone. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I tell you, that was the strangest U.S. Open. I've been to I'm sorry, over 20 of them, and of course I'll watch the ones that I didn't attend. But that was the strangest U.S. Open I think I've ever seen. The thing that's, you know, what I'll always remember from that U.S. Open, and I know that the golf was great. The 62s was in the first day was fantastic, but I still can't get over the fact that they had an 85-yard par 3 hole. that was a hard hole too. That was a thing that really really kind of struck me there. Of course, thought that all the way through it. When it captivating to me, I think, of most of the way, was that I thought we were going to see the dramatic return to prominence of Ricky Fowler, and right. To a degree we did, but it didn't really happen because he didn't finish the job. But a lot of drama in that U.S. Open, a little bit of everything. It seemed like it was. I don't know what to make of Los Angeles Country Club, even after watching most all of it for 4 days. As I say, the par 3 in the 80-yard range is kind of defies the imagination for me at a U.S. Open.
Lem, they still had a double bogey. Somebody had a double bogey on that hole.
Yeah, I know it.
You know, I had
it's the. It's a hard 80 yards. I mean, what
it's what makes this game great. You know, I had a chance to spend the day on Monday with golf course architect Greg Martin, who's been a friend of ours, and he was smiling ear from ear to ear. He loved the course. He loved seeing things like you point out on the short hole that just maybe buck the convention of what we think a golf hole should be, what the conventional length is, what's a par 3, what's a par 5. And I think from the golf course architect's perspective, he thought it was great. Now, we did notice some of the players were a little outspoken about it. And funny correlation, guys. It was often the players who did not play as well that maybe didn't like the golf course as much. I can't imagine why that would be.
Yeah, Justin Thomas shooting 80 and, you know, things like that. Colin Morikawa, a California guy, and, you know, he didn't make the cut either. So, and you know what? We do want to report some exciting news. It's apparently he must have just gotten in the field. I believe he was an alternate, but Glen Oak Country Club in Glen Ellen, head golf professional Danny Mulhern is now in the field for this coming week's Danny. U.S. Senior Open. Danny, one of the Class Act Illinois PGA professionals, and we really wish him a great week of golf up at Stevens Point at Century World at this week's U.S. Senior Open. Should be great. And with that, we're going to go to our first guest. And Len Zeme and I had an opportunity to see a new product when we were down in Florida for the PGA show because the owners of this putter company came to speak to all the media at the opening day at the convention center breakfast. And we learned a little bit about a new line of putters called Makefield Putters that were born in the Philadelphia area. And to tell us a little bit more about them and the instant sort of success that they're already having in tournament golf is Nick Biglasco, the Director of Brand Development. Nick, how are you this morning?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing well. How about you?
Well, we're doing good here in Chicago, and we hope it's great golf weather for everybody that wants to tee it up in the Philadelphia area today.
Yeah, it's a little rainy and a little humid, but we've turned the corner as far as the cold weather goes. So it's golf season's in full effect over here.
Well, Nick, over the last couple of weeks, we've done some other things on this show that have tied in with golf putters. And also, I watched an event at a club that I work at where our head golf professional just hauled several bags of another brand of putters outside and said basically, instead of doing this all computerized and through data and in a lab and video, let's just let people go out and try out putters on the large putting green at my club and hit them naturally. And it was amazing what a turnout there was for two straight days to test all these golf putters. So I think there's a lot of golfers out there that are interested in trying to find a way to, once they get on the green, to get the ball in the hole a little quicker. And Nick, why don't you start by giving us a little history on how Makefield putters came to be?
Sure. So Makefield putters actually was a byproduct of COVID lockdown. Our owner and founder, Everett Farr, engineer and inventor by trade, has multiple businesses and multiple industries. He has an adult autistic son. And during COVID lockdown, his caretaker was not able to go over to the house. So he was leaving work around lunchtime to go home and help his wife care for his son. Started watching YouTube videos on putting. He's a golf nut, has been playing golf his entire life. Was watching YouTube videos on golf technology, specifically putters, and realized that the tech and the R&D that goes into drivers and fairway woods and irons really wasn't being put into the putting market. Developed a weight system, found a material, looked for some really performance-driven metrics when it comes to what you want out of a putter, and developed Makefield putters with another engineer and a local PGA pro. They debuted at the PGA show in 2022, and we've been off and running for a little over a year now.
Nick, tell us a little bit about how the name Makefield came together. I believe some people from the company were out driving in a car, and they saw a sign, and it just seemed to make sense with what you're trying to do when you're putting on the green and making your putts.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But so, you know, having Make in the company name and being a putter company almost sounds too good to be true. So Everett was out with his son, and they like on the weekends, they like to go out for long drives. I don't know if you're familiar with the suburbs of Philadelphia, but there's a lot of rural roads and county roads. It's a really nice area to drive through. So he was out on a drive with his wife and his family, and they came to a stop sign, and they saw a sign for Makefield, and the light bulb went off. They said, you know what, that's it. It's Makefield putters. So it was kind of a spur of the moment thing, but it makes a lot of sense as far as what the company is. And so much of the story behind Makefield is, you know, driven by Everett and his family. And it's really, I don't do it justice. You have to hear him tell the story for it to really hit home.
Well, Nick, you're doing a pretty good job of it, quite honestly. And, you know, what I love is here you've got an engineer's mindset in Everett, but there that whole idea of make comes straight from the sports psychologist, right? That positive mindset. But you mentioned earlier that from an engineer's perspective, the thought was that some of the technology and maybe even the configurability going into putters didn't match what we were seeing. What we were seeing overall in drivers. And I know the weight system is part of what we've seen adjustable in drivers, but this has been brought in for your brand. This has been brought into to putters as well. Maybe you can explain to our listeners a little bit how that works and what some of the options are.
Sure. So one of the first company taglines was driver technology in a putter. We've seen now for probably the better part of a decade and a half, movable weights, slidable weights, all kinds of different things in driver and fairway woods. Most of the weighting in putters has been through the sole of the club. So what Everett and other co-founders realized that if you elevate the center of gravity, you can actually affect skid and affect forward roll. So if you look at our putter heads, our weights go through channels through the back of the putter head at the equator of the club head, right? So you're not screwing weights in through the bottom and dragging that center of gravity down. You're putting them in parallel to the ground so that the center of gravity of the club head is actually equal to the center of gravity of the golf ball. That's a lot of sort of techie stuff. But basically, what's happening is you are meeting both center of gravities at the same point and reducing skid, increasing forward roll. Increased forward roll leads to better distance control, allowing the golf ball to stay online better and longer. There's a ton of benefits to the technology behind it.
Well, it's overall fascinating to see the approach taken. And I know we have golfers out there who are always maybe working on their stroke, fiddling around a bit and saying, I'm going to keep changing, But here there's a chance to really configure and fit your putter to where you are now and what your tendencies already have you in a position to do. For someone who's interested in a Makefield putter, what would the fitting process look like, or how would they start making choices about what was best going to suit their game?
So we have a fitting studio in Bensalem, PA. We have some high tech cameras and software and things that we use to do things in person. We've actually started fittings over the phone, length, lie angle, things like that. Our weight system is fully adjustable to where if you have a miss left or right, we can move the weights around to sort of compensate a little bit for some directional deficiencies. We think that there's a gap in putting education. So, you know, people go into a brick and mortar, they pick up a putter, they hit five putts on a piece of turf with it, they make three, they're like, oh, okay, cool, I like this, and then they walk out. So, you know, just providing information to golfers so that they can be a little bit more knowledgeable about what they're putting in their golf bag. We've done a number of fittings over the phone in terms of, you know, send us a video, send us pictures of your setup, things like that. One of our big projects over the past 6 months has been to sign on other fitters across the country. So if there are any club fitters out there that have an interest in our product, by all means, reach out. We'll get you on board. But, you know, we think putting a putter in a bag involves more than just sort of a five-minute exercise.
1017, Golfers on Golf Radio in studio, Rory Spears, Ed Stevenson, Bill Berger. Len Ziem is on the line with us from the beautiful Palmare Studios in Sarasota, Florida, and we're chatting for a few minutes with Nick Biglasco of Makefield Putters in the Philadelphia area. And Lenny, any questions for Nick this morning?
Well, you know, I've got to say, I've kind of gotten attached to the Makefield story. It's an interesting story and a very interesting club concept. I've gotten... it's not just the PGA show that was where I first heard the name Makefield, but Makefield has also had representatives at two of the International Network of Golf events, and I'm, you know, very close to that group. They had one in Sebring, Florida, in last fall, and then we just had one at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, which. We got to know more and more about Makefield putters. I'm very impressed. I tell you, new putters are they're a very common thing come January every year at the merchandise show, and you don't hear about a lot of them after that. But we've certainly heard more about Makefield, and for good reason. I'm really impressed by the marketing effort and how you've been getting the word out. Have you got you taking more new steps in that regard? It seems like you're doing a great job getting the word out on a new club.
Thank you. Yeah, we've made a couple of strategic changes when it comes to marketing and networking. At first, we did a lot of demo days, like Rory described earlier, setting up golf bags in a tent out on a putting green. We made a really big push being a part of the ING. to establish relationships with you know, people like yourselves who are either on radio or do podcasts or write articles. We've made a significant push in terms of trying to attract tournament players. So one of our staffers, Braden Shattuck, he is a club pro at Rolling Green outside Philly. He won the National Club Pro out in New Mexico about a month or so ago, which got him an entry into the PGA Championship. So we were up at Oak Hill for that week during the practice rounds. We also had another new staffer was the third alternate at the U.S. Open this past week. So we were really close to having two staffers and two majors this year, which really exciting for us being a new company. So we're making a big push in terms of a networking effort and really trying to find people that believe in what we're doing and like the technology and like the performance aspect of it.
Well, Nick, the win this year at the National PGA Club Pro, I believe, was not the first time that that's happened with a Makefield putter. I believe it's now you've got two winners in 3 or 4 years?
We had three representatives out at the National Club Pro. We had, in 2022, we had two Philadelphia Players of the Year, a pro and an amateur. We've had some really good success. We have about five Korn Ferry starts so far since January. DA Points has had versions of our putter in his bag from multiple tour starts. So we have some really, really good traction when it comes to tournament golf for only being 18 months old.
Well, Nick, it's interesting. You mentioned DA Points. Lenny and I have both known him and played some golf with him for a long time, and it would be nice to see his game get back on track a little bit more than where it's been. So, Nick, finally, give us some websites, social media information where people can get a look at Makefield putters and perhaps get lined up to get one into their golf bag before the golf season ends here up north.
Sure. So it's makefieldputters.com, M-A-K-E-F-I-E-L-D, putters.com. Our socials are at Makefield Putters, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can go on our website, check out our products. There's a number on there if you want to call and talk to anybody to get more information. And then we also run promos. We're running a promo through the end of the month for Father's Day, and then we're going to start one July 1st for the 4th of July. Since Makefield is made in the USA, we're going to run some promos through July for that as well. So check out the website. There's coupon codes on all our social medias. And yeah.
All right. Well, Nick Piglasco, the Director of Brand Development for Makefield Putters. Hey, thanks for taking a few minutes out on your Saturday to join us here at Golfers on Golf Radio. And Nick, if we don't talk to you sooner or see you somewhere before then, we'll hope to at least see you in Orlando next January at the show. But we'll be following the developments of those players, especially in professional or top-level amateur golf that are using your putters. And again, continued success, and we hope to see more of them out on various tours.
No, thank you so much for having me on. We appreciate the interest. We appreciate the support. We'll talk soon, and hopefully we've got some more big and good news to share with you guys.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to hearing about any new lines that or new styles that you come up with later in the year. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks.
Okay. It's 10:23, and before we get down to the bottom of the hour, when I was up at the media event for this week's U.S. Senior Open at Stevens Point, the Century World, I had a chance to catch up with USGA Senior Open Championship Director Ben Kimble, asked him a few thoughts about this week's tournament, and he also shared some thoughts with us about the USGA's presence in the city of Chicago.
I know that you talked about the course being shut down this year and those kind of conditions, but could you take it one step further? They were closed like during COVID, and then about time they were ready to reopen, they decided to do the improvements in advance, and they closed again and closed again. So you're not really just getting a course that's been closed this spring. You're getting a course that's been closed to outside play for almost 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And how much of a difference does that make instead of just being closed for, say, 3 months this year?
Well, I think agronomically it helps tremendously. You know, with all the renovations and everything that was going on, it gave more than the appropriate time for things to heal. And then it gave us more than enough time to then look at, you know, the new sight lines and how everything played out to make any further refinements. You know, even still to this day, we're still looking at some tree work and last minute things that are going to have impact, not as much inside the ropes, but for the fan experience and other things. So it has given us a tremendous leg up on all aspects of conducting the championship here, both inside and outside the ropes.
How tempting might it be to put some pin positions that could lead to a possible ace on the flower hole? Somebody makes one of those, you know it'll be in highlight reels for years.
Yeah, I think, you know, the flower hole certainly, as we were selecting hole locations, beginning to figure out hole locations yesterday, we want it to be a test of golf to where whoever hoists that trophy is the right person. But every now and then, you got to maybe contemplate instituting a little entertainment value as part of it. And we know that the flower hole will shine. You know, I don't even know what the flower hole design is going to look like and what colors will be there. That's been a secret that Century World has kept from us. So it's going to be exciting to us. But most definitely, I think you'll see some short birdie opportunities on 17 during the week.
I know that some
16, excuse me.
Okay. Some championships, they advertise a certain yardage, and then things move around, and especially at the senior level, we've heard courses are advertised, oh, they're going to play 7,100, then they're really playing 6,780. I know you mentioned a window there. How close will you stay to the yardage, pending weather, obviously, where you'll set up your tee boxes?
Unless we get a lot of wind and a lot of rain, we'll be above 7,000 yards for sure the entire 4 days. I think that we do have the flexibility to move it around if we need to, but I don't know that we'll have to, because I think we won't have to go up teeing grounds. We can stay on the same teeing ground and provide the same level of experience. They've got sub-air beneath all the greens. You know, the greens won't get overly soft on us. It's just really how fairways are receptive if we get kind of heavy rain. But I know this isn't a windy part of the world or Wisconsin, so we should be fine. I'm willing to bet we'll be over 7,000 every single day.
What kind of potential do you see for Century World in the future with the USGA from what you've seen so far?
Well, so far their commitment to the preparation says a lot. I mean, it's a hard decision to make, given everything that, you know, that we've gone through with the renovations and stuff. I think it was the right decision that they made. That says a lot about kind of how they back things that come here. Our experience today, I think, is going to be a testament to that. But there's a lot of unknowns still. This is a new golf course, new to when even the 19 girls junior was here. We don't know how it will necessarily play. We can't. I'd love to be able to look back on it and say, oh, we knew that. But that's not necessarily the case. There's some new, not new holes, but new fairway widths. There's a couple of new greens. The 13th hole, I mean, look around the room. You know, there's pictures of holes that are very different than the last time we played. So I think, like any championship, we got to wait till the end. We got to say, hey, what went well, what went poorly, and then make an evaluation after the fact.
The term anchor sites is getting used, places like Pinehurst, so forth, etc. Between Erin Hills and Century World, has the USGA found, shall we say, two anchor courses here in the state of Wisconsin?
I would say, I don't know if I'd say that, but I would say I think Wisconsin's probably an anchor state. I mean, you look at from Lake Michigan to where we are now, the wonderful golf that's within the state of Wisconsin, whether, you know, it's Kohler down through kind of Milwaukee, heading towards Erin Hills, leading up through kind of where Sand Valley and Stevens Point is. And, you know, you could keep going on all the way into Minneapolis. And this stretch, this kind of golf trail, if you will, is just phenomenal. We keep coming back. And I like to think the primary reason that we're coming back is outstanding golf and outstanding people and great, you know, community support. And when all those things come together, we have a great championship.
Can you tell me, is the USGA excited about the future events that they've scheduled at the Chicago Golf Club? All of us down in Chicago would love to see more of the USGA coming to town, especially since our tour events have gone more frequently of late out of town.
Well, Chicago is a great city for golf, and being back at Chicago Golf Club is outstanding. Obviously, a founding member of the USGA. I'd like to think that we'll continue to be coming into that area as often as we possibly can. But given that we only have 15 championships in a year, there's only so much love that you can spread around. But coming back to a great club like Chicago Golf is going to be a thrill for many. And I know we had a great Senior Women's Open there, and I don't think it'll be the last time that we find ourselves in the Windy City.
That's Ben Kimball, Senior Director of Championships, U.S. Senior Open, and the Women's Open as well. With that, we're going to take our break, and we'll be back with Bob Farron from Pinehurst Resort right after this. Erin Hills, one of Wisconsin's top public golf destinations and a top 100 rated golf course, is ready to welcome golfers to a championship golf experience. Erin Hills is where you can enjoy walking on the rolling hills of the Kettle Moraine area just northwest of Milwaukee. Erin Hills has already hosted 4 USGA championships, including the U.S. Amateur and the 2017 U.S. Open. Now, a 5th USGA championship is coming in 2025, and this time it's the ladies' turn when the Women's U.S. Open arrives. It's also one of 6 U.S. Open courses open for public play. Now at Erin Hills is the 63,000-square-foot putting green, the Drumlin, open for unlimited use for those with a scheduled tee time. While at Erin Hills, you can stay in rooms over the Irish pub or in one of the several cottages right on property. During the warm days of summer, enjoy beverages like a Fescue Rescue or a cold Erin Hills Pilsner. So book your tee times now, because tee times and rooms are going quickly. So book your play and stay by calling Erin Hills at 866-772-4769 or visit erinhills.com. Mistwood Golf Club, located on Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's finest public golf facilities, where golfers find a commitment to excellence by the owners, the McWethy family. Mistwood Golf Club, designed and renovated by architect Ray Hearn, is a links-style golf course with 20 sidewall bunkers like those found in Scotland or Ireland. Mistwood has played host to several championships, including the state amateur, and it's the yearly home of the Illinois Women's Open. The driving range and performance center comes with natural grass hitting areas and indoor hitting bays, perfect for lessons, practice, or club fittings. Before or after your round, stop in and enjoy the bar and grill in the performance center or dining in McWethy's Tavern in the main clubhouse. So make your tee times today by calling 815-254-3333 or visit online mistwoodgc.com.
And we're back on Golfers on Golf Radio. We're making the turn into the second half hour of our show. And with you this morning, hosting the show, is Rory Spears alongside Bill Berger. I'm Ed Stevenson, and we've got Len Zeem on the line as well. But guys, here, it's been going full swing. We've had a little fun talking about the U.S. Open so far, and then learning a little bit more about Makefield putters. But even as we stay in full swing here in Chicago for the golf season, and it's going, the courses are busy, we're also knowing that winter's coming at some point in the shoulder season, and usually planning our next golf trip as well.
Yeah, there's so many great places across the country to go, but no place better than perhaps the home of American golf, or the cradle of American golf, which is in Pinehurst, in North Carolina. And like they love to say at the draft, well, you're on the clock. And when the final putt fell by Wyndham Clark at the U.S. Open, it put the 2024 site on the clock. And to join us from the site of next year's U.S. Open and the Pinehurst No. 2 course is the Director of Grounds and Maintenance, Mr. Bob Farron. Bob, how are you this morning?
I'm doing very well, thanks. We're, as you said, we're on the clock, so it's just kind of amped up our enthusiasm for everything, and looking forward to next year.
Well, Bob, I know that when you and I were driving around in your vehicle through the chopped down trees on what's going to be the new number 10 course or the 10th course at Pinehurst back in January, we talked a little bit also about number 2. And I know that Bill Kaur, who works with Ben Crenshaw, had just been there to look at a couple of things. But something tells me from what I know and from looking at the golf course that Old Pinehurst number 2 isn't going to get, you know, chopped up a little bit, and the USGA is not going to come in and make a whole bunch of changes before they bring the U.S. Open to town next June. But, Bob, maybe you can start by telling us a little bit about anything that's been done and what or could still happen on number 2 before championship week next year.
Yeah, well, really, having looked at, as you said, Bill Kaur here and John Bonehammer and the USGA, the championship setup teams and management teams, essentially there's no changes. The contestants that are here for they were here in 2014 will play essentially the same course as next year as they played then. Really, no new tees or bunkers or anything of that nature. The one significant difference that you'll see, or you won't even realize, is that this will be the first time that the U.S. Open has been contested on Bermuda greens, the Ultra North greens. So those have been changed. We regrassed them in after the championship in 14. But essentially the setup and the firmness and the speed and everything about the greens will be the same as they were in 2014, as well as our leadership team. John Jeffries is our superintendent there now, was the assistant in 14. And we've just got a tremendous amount of experience and ready for the championship.
Well, I know in 2014, Bob, that you went back-to-back with both Opens, and I know that's going to happen again in about 6 years. Unfortunately, there's still some time to take a look at things and how they're going to happen there. I know the USGA is they're not even sure yet whether the men will go first or the women will go first in 29. But as for what's on tap in 2014, I know that, as we talked about, Bill Kaur was there to take a look at things. And is there, you know, architects come back to properties they've worked on and sometimes they want to tinker a little bit. Did Bill have any thoughts or ideas that he presented to you and your team and the resort in advance of the Open?
No, not at all. Actually, Bill comes by. We have him here at least once a year. He loves to come here and spend some time with us. And we documented all the features of the course in 14, or in, actually when they did the restoration in 2010 and 11. We documented what the bunkers look like because things do tend to shift and change in time. And we always want to go back and make sure that they are as we intended for them to be, or he intended for them to be, and make any tweaks that's necessary. So that's simply just kind of a checkup every year that we like to do that before things would get too far out of hand.
Well, I know we started the segment, Bob, talking about being on the clock, and of course the anticipation of preparing for an event like the U.S. Open, of course. Really, you're on the clock every day with really resort expectations for Pinehurst and are so high and lived up to in so many ways that I know day in and day out, your superintendent, John Jeffries, his team are preparing that course to be a special experience. But challenging the best players in the world and living within the USGA's expectations for championship golf changes a little bit. What sort of things will change in the maintenance routine? And what sort of really, when will the process start of maintaining the course maybe a little bit differently for the best players in the world versus your resort guests in anticipation of the championship?
Yeah, certainly. You know, our mantra is really every day is someone's U.S. Open.
That's true.
Really, and it truly is. And the resort guests that we have come to play and enjoy all the Pinehurst courses, we want them to have that championship experience. Now, having said that, certainly as we go into the final push of the last few weeks going into the championship, everything just increases in intensity to a certain extent. The primary thing we're evaluating right now are the native roughs. they change seasonally. You've been here often enough to realize that. So we target mid-June, championship week, of what the roughs would look like next year, and manipulate them if we can to manage them the best we can to present the challenges that we want, the standards that we would want for the championship next year. So that's what we're focusing on this week. And then we've got the North-South Championships coming up, which is give John and his team an opportunity to really dial it in to the championship, elite championship level play on the regarding the firmness of the greens as well as the pace of the greens. If the greens are on the pace of the greens on a normal target week for us right now is 10 and a half to 11. The championship speeds would be closer to 13 and a half.
Yeah,
well, that'll
so
be.
We certainly can't do that day out for no one's.
Pace of play would be 6 hours.
Championship regardless.
Yeah, Bob, you and your team will look forward to that pace of play schedule. 10:40, you're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio with Bill Berger, Ed Stevenson, Rory Spears in studio. Len Ziem on the line down in Florida. And, Len, any questions for Bob Farren this morning?
Well, you know what strikes me? I'm not surprised at all that why would you want to need to do much of anything to Pinehurst number two? I mean, that's one of the maybe the greatest courses in America. But I know that at Pinehurst, I make a regular stop there every year or two, or mainly for travel writing purposes, destination writing. And there's always something new going on at Pinehurst, not just on golf. And I know that I think that I really haven't heard an update on the arrival of the USGA. I know that they're having headquarters there. I'm wondering what interests me is what's going to be going on away from watching the golf. What's new in Pinehurst for the people that are going to go there to visit? And there's many of them coming, including me. So where do you stand away from the golf as the town of Pinehurst and so forth?
That's a great segue to talk about really the things that people will see. People that may have only been here in 2014 was the last time they were here. They'll mm-hmm. see the new Deuce restaurant, the Cradle, our par three course has been an absolute rave. The Digo Hans's version of course number four, the redesign of course four, Pinehurst Brewing Company. The list goes on and on, but the major thing that I think people would notice right now is the Carolina Hotel had not been really renovated extensively over the past 50 years back into the 70s. And we're really working on all the interior, the infrastructure of the hotel itself from a not only a renovation perspective, but really a restoration perspective. Realizing the success we had with restoring Pinehurst number two to what it was in its glory days in the 40s and 50s. Looking at applying the same filter, if you will, for the Carolina restoration, the details of the millwork within the interiors and the textures of the interiors to make it more of the classic 50s and 60s instead of the too much of the 70s and 80s. So that's a great thing you'll see. Everyone's interest and passion with outdoor living areas and outdoor fire pits and such around the new Carolina Vista Bar that used to be the Ryder Cup Bar. It's a Carolina Vista Bar. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful site there. And give people the opportunity to enjoy that space.
Bob, go ahead.
A little further on that, as far as the USGA is concerned, we're so excited to be the anchor site, the first anchor site they announced, and then building the USGA Golf House Pinehurst right on our campus. And they're really moving along well with it. Then added to that, the World Golf Hall of Fame sharing that space is incredible. We'll induct the 50th next year will be the 50th anniversary of the first inaugural induction in 1974, right here on our property. I took a little hiatus down to Jacksonville for 20 years or so, and now we're happy to welcome it back for the 50th year.
Bob, I got to ask you, back in January, we drove around through a bunch of trees and a bunch that had been sawed down and taken out, and some were getting burned up at the time. And from what we see online, it appears that architect Tom Doak and his lead associate Angela Moser have been pretty busy. And the 10th property or the 10th course or whatever they're going to call it over there on part of the land that used to be the Pitt Golf Course is taking shape. What can you tell us about what's happened there in the 5 months since we drove around?
Yeah, Roy, I was trying to remember if it was around the Masters that you were here, but then you say it was in January. We have certainly made a lot of progress since January. I was down on Pinehurst number 10 this morning with Angela Moser, and she was doing some fine grading around the 11th green. So we have 11 greens that are already sprigged, and most of 14, 15 holes have been sodded, the tees and fairways and everything, all irrigation. So we're 95% complete with the major construction pieces. It just takes time to settle in this fall, that we've got the luxury of really fine-tuning it this fall to be ready to open next spring.
Well, that should be really exciting. I know that Angela Moser told me that the resort wanted to get that golf course open in advance of the U.S. Open in June, and from everything we're seeing, it looks like they are staying on schedule to do that. And Bob, any idea when they're going to start doing some of the other things over there that have been talked about, places to stay and perhaps Ben and Bill coming in to look at some point when they got a free moment about how they can use the rest of the land as well?
Yeah, there's plenty of land down there and some great ideas and visions and dreams of what it can be over the next, 3 to 5 to 25 years. Of cottages and some really nice immersive experience to go down there as a destination in itself and play at least one 18-hole course and a short course and maybe another course in the future. So we're excited about that. And we'll start building some cottages on course number eight later this fall and next spring. So We find that our guests and the traveling guests that like to stay in cottages and have their own experience like that. So that's kind of the direction we're going with that as well.
Well, Bob, I know that the Dedman family and President Tom Pashley and the team there have really done nothing but keep yourself and your team busy with plenty of projects. And, in speaking with Tom down there at the beginning of the year, he says sometimes we do so many things. He says we never really take a step back to realize all we've accomplished in the last decade or so. And it just seems like this property keeps evolving. And the management team does a great job of walking the fine line of preserving its history and at the same time being modern enough to attract the next generation of golfers and their families.
I agree 100%. I can't tell you how grateful I am to be able to work in my career for with an ownership group as the Dedman family, as dedicated they are as caretakers of Pinehurst, and again to preserve the history of it, but also establish a great future for all of us that are involved in it. Tom Pashley's leadership on that is absolutely spot on. With he and Mr. Dedman and the rest of the Dedman family's support and dedication to what we're doing. And it's daunting to look back and realize how much we have been able to accomplish in the last 10 or 12 years is really remarkable.
Well, Bob Farron, Director of Grounds and Maintenance, Pinehurst Resort, I thanks so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule that I know is going to get even busier in the months ahead as you get closer to the U.S. Open and the opening of the new 10th course at Pinehurst and eventually getting the hotel back open and all those cottages built that are going to go in over at number 8 and perhaps around the 10th course as well. Bob, take care. Thanks for giving up some time on the weekend. We appreciate you joining us up here in Chicago at Golfers on Golf.
Certainly. We look forward to visiting with you again soon. Take care.
All right. Take care. That's Bob Farren. And, Ed, you talk about a guy with a lot on his plate. He's been through course improvement after course improvement after renovation after three hotel renovations, cottage buildings, restaurant enhancements. There's the list never ends. And I know you look at your schedule sometimes and say, well, it's really crazy, Rory. We got three golf courses. Well, imagine being somewhere where they're juggling 10 or 11 of them.
That's a lot, and especially with championship golf. You know, you think about being on the clock for the upcoming U.S. Open next year, but it's one of those anchor sites that we heard Ben Kimball talk about. You'd asked about it with the USGA, and clearly the USGA has made a commitment to keep coming back to Pinehurst. So we see dates coming, you know, all the way into past 2040 committed to being at that location. So I got to imagine you always feel like you're preparing for the next championship. And yeah, pretty amazing property. And they don't stand still at Pinehurst.
No, they don't. Billy, did you get down to Pinehurst at all when you were chasing the little white ball around for
you
years?
You know, I did quite a while ago. And I know I first ever heard of it, Caddy, and, you know, in Youngstown Country Club, the members used to go to Pinehurst.
That was their winter trip from Youngstown.
That was
huh?
their trip, and a big deal. And that's the first time I'd ever heard of it. But probably was in the late 40s. And that was their super-duper trip for a long period of time, you know.
And probably Billy still is.
Probably is.
Well, in the late 40s, up till I believe the middle of 1948, you could go down there and Donald Ross would be sitting in his backyard along the along Pinehurst too. They were waving at some people and
fewer courses at that point.
Yeah, how they'd play the golf course. Len Zeem, what's news on your front? I know that you just posted your column in the Daily Herald, and you've been still pumping out some things on various travel destinations, and I know that. You've probably talked to our friend Chris King down at Myrtle Beach. It looks like some of their courses have gotten a bit of recognition from various national publications of late.
Well, actually, with Chris, we were with him, I guess it was early last week at Daytona Beach, and what a bunch of changes they've made there, not so much in golf, but over the whole community there. But Daytona Beach has really made some big steps we stayed right around the auto track and a beautiful new hotel there, a whole lot of new building going on there. But the news for us right now is we're getting anxious to get down and seeing you guys. We're leaving, I think, Wednesday or Thursday of this week. We're going to head for French Lick, Indiana, and pay some time at Sultan's Run in Jasper, Indiana, where the senior LPGA is going to be conducted next week, and then onto the John Deere Classic, which really looking forward to, and then we're not sure exactly where we're headed from there, but we're planning on making this our stretch, our Midwest stretch, and it should go into August, I would think. We haven't had firm dates every place we're going yet, but and we've got some family commitments and all. But it's going to be fun. We're looking forward to taking off and leaving Florida, but just for a while.
All right. Well, it'll be nice to get you back up here in Illinois and back in the studio with us. And I'll tell you what, it's been you know, kind of a crazy time of late, and tournament after tournament. Of course, U.S. Senior Open this week, John Deere Classic coming up the week after that. And, you know, on the heels of that, there's going to be a stretch run in July and into August with a lot of tournaments starting to happen. And, you know, I know, Len, you've always been a birdies and bogeys guy, and you're anxious to get back and start writing about that.
Oh yeah, it's good. It's good to see the competition. We've enjoyed playing all around the country, getting just to play courses. But this is really, you know, from a Midwestern guy, this is where we. It's not just the John Deere Classic. We've got the Illinois Open, the Illinois Women's Open, the Chicago District Amateur, all the good local tournaments there. They're always interesting. The state amateurs. And then, of course, with the BMW there, the Live Tour coming in September, it's going to be an extended fall tournament season in the Chicago area, and a lot of events well worth watching.
Yeah, well, certainly close to home for me, and coming up very quickly, Len, we've got the, you mentioned the Illinois Open, we have the Senior Illinois Open that will be hosted Monday and Tuesday at the Preserve at Oak Meadows, so... Mike Small will be back out as part of a field of 140 players to defend his title last year, also at the Preserve at Oak Meadows. And, of course, is in fabulous shape, so, you know, should be a great venue for the event. And that field, you know, it's funny, lots of guys that, you know, all the names I remember, you know, playing with in Illinois PGA events as young guys are, they're now teeing it up in the Senior State Championship as the Illinois Open. And, pretty excited to host it. So yeah, we've got a strong field, and the tournament season just keeps rolling on from there.
Crazy week for Mike Small. He's going to be at the Preserve Monday and Tuesday, and then probably driving right on Tuesday night up to Stevens Point to get prepared for the U.S. Senior Open. He is in the field after qualifying down at Flossmoor, and you know what? It'll be interesting to see. How the coach plays. You know, he's had a good game for a long time, but two big tournaments in the same week, you know, that can be a grind on anybody, Len.
It certainly be a grind on me, but yeah, Mike has got an interesting week ahead on the playing side. I wasn't sure whether, you know, just what decisions he'd make, but his, you know, his University of Illinois guys who have come out into the just joined the tour the Korn Ferry Tour, they've been doing great, and they're just young kids. They have trouble keeping up with their coach.
Yeah,
very true.
Well, you know, it's funny. a couple of years ago, I used to talk to Nick Hardy, and I'd say, "Do you still play golf with Coach?" And you know, maybe you and Dylan Meyer and people like that. And he says, yeah, he says, well, we don't do it so much anymore because he's always crying that he's too busy to practice and he's too busy recruiting to play, and he always wants shots from us on each side. So he goes, we know better to give him all the shots that he's asking for. So, you know what?
A truly seasoned veteran asking for those shots.
Yeah. It was also nice to see some of our locals make the cut. Over at the Hartford this week, I know Nick Hardy made the cut. I believe Kevin Streelman did as well, who's had some success there in the past. So hopefully we'll get a chance to see some of them compete on the network TV this weekend. I also want to throw a quick shout out, special thanks to Joe Leskis, the membership and marketing guy at the Elgin Country Club, who is nice enough to tour me around the improvements of the clubhouse and the improvements on the golf course, a well-done bunker renovation program with new bunkers and white sand, and the course really looks outstanding, and work of architect Dave Essler, and I know there's some talks going on about some other tweaks to the golf course as well. Elgin Country Club, I know it's a private club, but if you ever get a chance to get out there, it's a wonderful track with elevation change that we don't always see in the Chicago area. And you know, the white sand that went in really adds something to the golf course. And speaking of that, I think before too long, we're going to learn a little bit more about that operation and what's made that product so popular to golf courses across the country. Stay tuned to Golfers on Golf Radio in the next week or two. We'll have more on that. And sorry we didn't get it out this week. We're still putting the finishing touches on our Medina 3 story, but that is coming up early this week.
All right. Well, you'll find that on golfersongolf.com. That's where our very own Rory Spears brings you news between the broadcasts. Of course, we'll be back on the air next week at 10 a.m. here on WNDZ. Somewhere between now and then, I want to make sure you find your way. I'm going to try to find my way out to Grand Avenue and find Jake's Pizza on Grand Avenue. You might run into our very own Billy Burger making the finest Chicago area thin crust. And just talking about it is making me hungry. So a quick thank you to our guests from Makefield Putters as well as from Pinehurst, where we spoke to Bob Farron. A thank you to our producer, Brian, and of course, the whole team here at WNDZ. Most of all, we thank you, our listeners. Enjoy the weekend, and until next week, when you tune back into Golfers on Golf Radio, hit them straight.
The preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.